It's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
Welcome, welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. I am Gene Bolduc, your host, and joining me today is celebrity chef and senior impeachment correspondent, Penny Rich. Penny Rich, how are you?
Oh, goodness. Impeachment correspondent. That's kind of an interesting title.
Yeah. You know, I think now that we're experiencing the second go round, I think, you know, we should just embrace the unique historic quality of this week. You know, we're recording on Wednesday.
It's going on right now.
We're kind of by delay live tweeting sort of this event, and by Saturday when this airs, Donald Trump will have been impeached twice. I don't know what's going to happen in the Senate, but I'm one of those people who subscribes to the idea that that the House is doing the right thing to kind of break this down into, I'm not worried about what the Senate does. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. I have my responsibilities as a member of the House of Representatives. And if there could be a more clear and convincing case for impeachment of a president, I shudder to think of what in the world it would be.
Oh my, I think that's right. Yeah. And you know, it's almost like the first time around, even though that was very, very serious, it seems like that was practice for now. And you know, it's hard to say that, right? But you and I were both listening before we started this show, and we've seen this before. We've seen this back and forth, and it's just stunning that we're going through this twice in less than a year. A year.
I mean, that was last January. You know, we thought, wow, this is what did they impeach him? Actually in December, right before Christmas?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember.
You know, it feels like 10 years ago.
It does. Well, everything. I mean, we've only been a week away from the attempted coup, and it feels like, we've lost a sense of time. I did a tweet about that, how we actually don't know what time is anymore. And that's a combination of things, right, Gene? Right. The 4 years of Donald Trump, but also an entire year now of COVID with, the first case of COVID was sort of discovered in America early January last year. So we're a year into that as well. So we've lost a sense of that. You and I were joking around before, once we get the vaccine, maybe we can go somewhere, but where? The porch, the backyard. I mean, so we're living in this very, very surreal time. It feels like everything we're doing is a repeat of something that we did last year. This is true.
Let me take my my personal privilege here and say we're recording on January 13th. On January 13th in 1982, I started contractions, and and there was a tremendous snowstorm and ice storm, and my son was born the next day, and that was the day. But the 13th was the day that this airplane went into the Potomac, flight 99 from Florida.
Oh my goodness. I remember that too. Wow.
Crashed in, and I was watching the coverage from that. I honestly thought for a lot of my adult life, that's the most horrifying thing I could see in Washington. But I think this kind of beats that. I mean, that was this business last week, this attack on me and you. And our government and our way of life. I did dip into the coverage of Trump speaking while he was speaking live at the White House. And, I have found myself to be a person these days who, thanks to Mary Trump's book, I feel like I understand Trump a lot better than I did 3 months ago or 6 months ago. I kind of get the family history, the upbringing, how he got to be how he is. Doesn't excuse any of it. It's just about understanding it. It's almost like studying a criminal mind. And what he did was unsurprising to me in that way. I mean, it's quite predictable. And watching it and thinking that this was going to amount to nothing, seeing when I was watching the crowd, I thought it doesn't seem like that much of a crowd, but of course you're only seeing the folks who are standing there at the Ellipse but seeing, and these are the kinds of things that are a little bit arcane, but on Inauguration Day 4 years ago, when I watched his press secretary, what was his name? I can't remember his name. Sean?
Spicer.
Oh, Spicer, right. Isn't that nice? I couldn't remember his name.
Yeah.
That was a nice moment right there.
That was a long time ago, Gene.
watching Spicer come into the press room, the James Brady press room, and stand up at that lectern and lie his caboose off, insisting about the crowd size, that it was the most gigantic crowd ever seen, period.
Period. I mean, it was period.
Period. You know, my father used to do that. He used to say, blah, 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 blah. His thing was, he'd say, period, end of report. And when he was really mad. Okay.
Yeah.
And he did that, by the way, that came from in those days when he would dictate memoranda and into a dictaphone or a recorder, whatever. When you did that, you dictated the punctuation as well. That's why he would do that. But anyway, seeing
him. You have to explain that for some people that are listening,
I know,
to this radio
show. In case we have a listener under 40.
Right.
Yeah. And you might want to Google dictaphone so you know what
right.
that is. It's,
exactly.
it's maybe not what you think right away. But anyway, when I saw that kind of struck me. In the heart, because James Brady, although he worked for a president who wasn't the guy who I voted for, Ronald Reagan, he took a bullet in the head
right.
instead of the president getting that bullet when Reagan was shot in 1981. And it was such a piece of sacrilege for him to step in there in that room in the White House where facts are to be distributed to the news media and just plainly lie his rear end off for the sake of the ego of the president. To me,
right.
that was one of the scariest things I ever saw, because I thought, oh, this is just going to be a complete clown car
and
of
it was.
Presidency.
And it is. It went
and
downhill
it has
from
been
there.
Every minute,
it just
all the
totally,
time.
Yep, totally downhill. So, I mean, good observation.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we were all kind of like looking at the same photograph and saying, there's not that many people there yet.
Yeah,
and so what?
What do you think
Who
that
cares?
Means? I mean, the parade, by the way, was an utterly pathetic inaugural parade. I was at Bill Clinton's inauguration in 93, and I watched George W. Bush's inauguration. In 2001, I watched it with tears streaming down my face, but I did watch it. People threw eggs at his limousine. And people were upset. But the parade was a pretty typical presidential parade. There are marching bands from all 50 states. And I mean, it's a great celebration of America, an inaugural parade. And Trump's was, how shall I say, pitiful. It was a pitiful, pitiful parade. And he wanted a military parade and thankfully didn't get it. He might get it next week on his way out. There might be tanks in that parade. One in front of Joe, one behind Joe.
Yeah.
I'm just
interested. You know, you and I talked, I don't know if the last show or the show before, about a peaceful transition. Maybe it was earlier on, maybe in December. And you know, I kind of wonder, like, what does this look like? Because, I mean, does Trump not, does he refuse to leave the White House?
Yeah, he will.
I mean, and so what does that show the American people? What is that going to look like?
Well,
and we're a week away, Gene. We're,
you know, here's that's going to be our thought balloon, and we're going to take our first break, and then when we come back, we're going to explain everything that's going to happen in the next week. We're going to put it all on the record and be completely wrong, probably.
Yeah, that's all right.
In most cases, but we'll do that. We're going to be back with Penny Rich. What else is new? Talking about the downfall of civilization and other things. We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back talking with Penny Rich, and we're talking about impeachment and transition of power. And I'm going to give you my mea culpa. I can admit when I've made a mistake. These are the most important words we have. I admit I've made a mistake. I underestimated by orders of magnitude that it was important for Trump to concede. I never thought he would concede, but I didn't think it was that important because I thought, you know, who cares if a sore loser steps up and says, okay, I lost? Who cares? What's the difference? Well, I think we know the difference now.
Right.
And you know, he continues to go out and claim that this was stolen from him. And it does matter because, unfortunately, there's over 100 elected officials on the Hill who, until now, would not correct him and would not say, well, no, you lost. You lost. Wasn't stolen. You just lost. That's what happened. So now, as of today, we at least have Mitch McConnell saying that he's glad that the Democrats are impeaching the president, although he describes it that that's what the Democrats are doing. What he ought to be saying is he's glad that the House of Representatives is impeaching the president because there, as of this point, I think are more than half a dozen House Republicans who are voting to impeach the president, which means that unlike the previous time, this is a bipartisan impeachment. It should be, you know, 400 members of the House. But anyway, it's the House, not just the Democrats, who are impeaching the president. He said that he's happy that they are because that means it will be easier for Republicans to purge Donald Trump from their party. And now, you know, Mitch McConnell is incredibly stingy with his words when it counts in a situation of this nature. But at least he has said that. And I will give this tiny, tiniest amount of credit. Everybody listen closely to a guy who I think is dumber than a bag of rocks, which is Kevin McCarthy, who said on the floor, who got during his floor speech today, did say, it wasn't Antifa last week. There's no evidence to support that. I am grateful that he did that.
Yeah.
I think it's important that a guy who is the dumbest person perhaps ever elected to anything, Kevin McCarthy of California, the minority leader in the House, at least put on the record that he is acknowledging, well, he acknowledged two things. One, that President Trump is responsible for what happened last week, and that it wasn't Antifa doing it. It's way too late.
It's all too late. Yeah.
You know, but I guess like Dr. King said, it's always the right time to do the right thing. And so that was the right thing for him to do. He still doesn't support impeachment. I think that's because they're scared to death of these people. You know what, Penny? They should be.
Yeah. Well, you know, let's step back a second to where you said that you felt like you were wrong about Donald Trump not conceding. I think a lot of people felt like you did. Okay, so he says he doesn't concede. It's no big deal. But then you need to look into the minds of the people that are following him.
That's
right?
Hard to do. Yeah.
Right. And
that's a dark place.
I know we don't want to go there. But then you also have, I mean, unlike you know, us talking on the radio, and you know, we people obviously know what side we are on. You have a Fox News who's clearly making false statements and just lighting the fire under this this riot, this mob, this terrorism. Right. Right. And so, you know, the outlet isn't there. The president lost his ability to be on Twitter and Facebook. And oh, goodness, there's a whole bunch of them that there. He's just gone, which is, yeah, I know. It's really quite amazing, though, because these large companies are able to cut him off. PGA is cutting him off. I mean, he's getting cut off from everything. Yet these people in Congress and the Senate can't grow enough to say, oh my God, I was wrong. Like right. You just did. They can't just say, oh, we were worried, and come out and say the truth. We're worried about the base, right?
Right.
But the base doesn't want to follow the Republicans. The base want to follow Trump. And so I think this is the Republicans are making a big mistake, is that once Trump is gone, that base that they think that they need, they're not going to be there. I don't know if they go back into hiding. I don't know what they do, but
That's such an important point, because I think that McConnell, I just give Mitch McConnell credit for being a smart politician in this respect. I don't think that he's making a principled stand about a damn thing. I think that he's trying to make a desperate effort to preserve a party, a Republican Party of some description. And he's trying to, you know, he's trying to avoid being sucked in as the ship goes down for the last part of a sinking ship. You know, there's that vortex that is formed when the last bit of the Titanic goes underwater. Right. Everything within a certain distance is going to be sucked in right behind
him. Right. That's right.
And that's what he's looking to avoid. He's trying to remain relevant as a Republican Party, and I don't know that they can do it. I think they're going to go the way of the Whigs, and there's going to be a new party created, a new conservative party.
And that's okay, Gene. It's perfectly fine
with me.
It is. I mean, I think, you know, a healthy debate is folks on both sides, and that's what we need. We need to get back to it. You can see it today. I mean, just watching TV for a short time. Yeah, when these folks come up and support Donald Trump, they are so blind to what the reality of what happened on Wednesday that they're going back to. I mean, there was one of them, I don't know who it was blaming Obama. I mean, Obama hasn't been president for 4 years, people. You know, it's like continuously blaming Hillary Clinton. But the reason why, of course, you blame Obama is because then you get that immediate racism in there, right? Because it's not about Obama. It's like, oh, you know, we got to get that racism. We can't say Black Lives Matter, but let's talk about Obama. So, I mean, I do think that we will see the Republican Party reinvent themselves. They're all talking now about unity. It's a little bit too late for that kind of rhetoric.
Here's the unity argument. Here's the unity argument that this is the abusive husband who opens the door and the police are there, and the wife is there with a black eye and a broken lip. And the husband turns to his wife and says, why are you breaking up our family by calling the police? That's exactly what this is. Can't we just get along? Can't we, we can work it out. And he says to her, as her mouth is dripping with blood, he says to her, I forgive you for calling the police. I'm reaching out to you now. I think that we should go to therapy together. That's what's happening here. America has been in an abusive relationship, and the country is, I think, at last on some levels breaking free from that. And of course, it's not going to be welcomed by most of these guys. Some of them have understood that their future lies in making the separation. And Mitch McConnell is one who says, this is our best chance to make this separation from Trump so that we can get back to arguing about whether or not to fund the military at this level or policy.
Right. So, infrastructure. You know. Infrastructure. Let's talk about infrastructure and putting people back to work.
Yeah. Remember Infrastructure Week?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? This it's a good analogy, Gene, and not to make light of use at all, because we know when COVID started, I could tell you in Orange County, the calls that came into the sheriff about domestic violence was up 165%. Right. I mean, that is outrageous, because suddenly people were stuck in a house with their abusers 24/7, and that it was a good. But this is what Donald Trump has done to America. It was an abusive relationship, and so the Republicans that stand behind him and still stood behind him today, as we were watching, they haven't gotten to that level yet of let me get out of this relationship. This is a bad relationship.
Yeah, and
I need to get out.
And you and I both know that that when a person tries to break free of their abuser, that's when it's most likely to get the most violent.
Most dangerous. That's correct.
Now, it's the most dangerous time. And that's the period that we're in right now. And it's a fluid situation. It's going to continue. It's going to continue for several weeks at this most dangerous level, to be honest.
I think that's right. Yeah, no, I think you're right.
And I think people have to have a healthy respect for that risk, for the risk that all of these legislators who are standing up, the risk that they're taking is very real. And by the way, they've just been through a terrible traumatic event. And if they have a little PTSD going on, I get it. I get how they would feel that way. And I hope that resources will be brought to their aid to help them. I would have a lot of trouble walking back into that building.
Oh, if absolutely. I were them. Absolutely. And you know, I can tell you as a county commissioner, once a year we went through safety drills.
Right.
And the sheriff led them and a couple of his guys led them. And we went through different scenarios. And just going through those scenarios, even though, you
That's
know,
scary.
At the end. Yeah, but exactly. I mean, you know, everybody's kind of joking around at the end and like, who's going to have the gun? And like, you know, we did go through active shooting. We went through stabbing, went through all this and what you should be doing and how you need to, you know, what you need to be doing. You got to be able to think about that on a split second.
But, that's right.
You know, here they were. They've gone through the drill. They know what they have to do. But now it was happening. And we were watching it live on TV. And it didn't look so smoothly, right? It didn't look like it was happening the way that they went through their drills. I'm telling you.
I'll tell you this. If I'm ever in trouble in a situation like that, I want me some Jason Crow in the bunker with me. That's who I want. I think that man has a bright future in whatever he wants.
Yeah, I agree.
Whatever he wants, I'm with him.
I'm there.
I wish he'd move to North Carolina so I could vote for him, but maybe he'll find a way to seek a higher office so that I can have a chance to vote for him. I thought he showed tremendous character and calm resolve in a high stakes situation, and every bit as much humility as you'd want in such a person, saying, well, you know, I mean, I have training and I thought about some things. I thought about asking the officer to let me have his weapon because I've been in a combat situation and this officer probably hasn't been. He's a Capitol Police officer.
Right.
It's not like, you know, doing a year in Fallujah. And, you know, he said, but, you know, my colleagues, everybody cooperated and you know, I just thought he was extremely impressive, and I think he's got a bright future. He's a great leader, as far as I'm concerned. And before this, I never heard of the guy.
Never heard of him, right?
Never heard
because,
of him.
Because we just didn't. But yeah, then you watched him, and it was
right
like,
now
oh,
I want him tattooed all over me. You know, don't mess with me. I'm a friend of Jason Crow. That's what I want. I'm a friend of Crow. All right, so we're going to take a quick break. We're way over time. I'm going to take a quick break. We're talking to Penny Rich. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Okay, we're back with Penny Rich, and we're talking about, obviously, what we've all been talking about for the last week or 10 days. Which is the attempted coup on January 6th. And I will reiterate what I said during the break, which is I don't understand why Mike Pence is having trouble I'm using a Shakespearean expression, screwing up the courage, screwing the courage to the sticking place is what Lady Macbeth called it. Mm-hmm. And invoking the 25th and yanking this man out of power. I have trouble understanding why when a mob is coming after you to kill you, and you know who the guy is who started all that, why you have trouble invoking the 25th to remove him. But we'll leave that little piece of political cowardice aside. I think somebody, Penny, somewhere down the road, somebody's going to do a very extensive interview with Mike Pence, and they're going to ask him that question. And I will be fascinated to know the answer, because I'm not sure it's as straightforward as I don't think that constitutionally, blah, blah, blah. Constitutionally, the Constitution gives you that authority. And if you don't think this is a reason to use it, I shudder to think, quite literally, right, what in the fresh hell you think it's for.
No. Well, you think about it. You got to go back to Mike Pence is trying to save his political career, right?
How does this do that, though?
It doesn't. Well, it doesn't, though, right? But so this is what he's thinking. But, you know, his political career and a lot of people that are aligned with Donald Trump are they need to think of another career, because they're not going to be able. Mike Pence is not going to be able to make a comeback after this. I mean, he really isn't.
Right. That's
so
right.
Do the right thing. You're supposed to be this higher person, right? Because of your religious beliefs, because of your, you know, your personal beliefs, because you've been involved in, I mean, you know, we all know what he did in Indiana against the LGBTQ community.
Right.
A lot of people forget that he was not kind as governor. But, you know, his political career is over. So let's hope, Gene, when we do hear that interview, that he can be honest and that he can really tell the story. Because right now, I mean, I can't believe anything that any of them say. I mean, it's just
right.
So difficult.
That's right.
And so, you know, maybe it happens. I don't know. But, you know, you and I were talking about at the break after this administration leaves, there's going to be a lot of talking and telling and books and columns and op-eds and writing.
And probably some great, great journalism, too, by the way.
I think that's right. And, you know, you especially would be attracted to that, being someone that is a writer and likes the journalistic point of view. This is going to be a telling time now in the next couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. If we can get some honest quotes and just things that are happening. I mean, it's so unreal. And day in and day out, Gene, we're living this.
I mean, what is it? You know, may you live in interesting times. You know, when we come back, you know, we're going to take another quick break in just a minute. But when we come back, we're going to get into, because it's one of the main reasons I wanted to talk to you. In my opinion, the underappreciated, if not to say most horrific, side of what happened is the anti-Semitic, disgusting things that we saw and expressed, that the president, who has Jewish grandchildren and a Jewish daughter, said nothing about, still says nothing about. It's just like, so what?
Right.
I really want to know where the leadership of maybe the best way of putting it, the Jewish caucus in the Congress, are they going, do you think that they're going to speak out forcefully about this? And I'm a little bit disappointed that it's not mentioned in the articles, but, mm-hmm. but we're going to take a break and we're going to come back and talk about that, because I'm just watching this stuff unfold, and it's just gobsmacking to me that the American government would let these things hang out there in this fashion without pushing back forcefully. We're talking with Penny Rich. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Okay, Mazel Tov. We're back talking to Penny Rich. And Penny, talk to me about, first of all, talk to me if you want to, about your response to from your perspective as a Jewish person watching this last week. And please tell me that you at some point turned off the TV and told your mom to, you know, watch something else. Let's watch something on Netflix. This is too upsetting.
Yeah. And so just so everybody knows, my mom is 91 years old and was living in America during the Holocaust. But my father's side of the family, even though my father was here, his parents were got here, sent over on boats when they were 9 years old. They didn't know each other without the rest of the family. Without the family, they were sent to America. They're sent to New York to go live with whoever. To get that, so they could get them out of Romania.
Right.
The rest of them that didn't want to go didn't make it. They didn't live.
Right.
So my father's side of the family, very, very small. My mother's side of the family, also really small, even though they hit her parents. Her parents were actually born here because my great grandparents were, after World War One, were like, yeah, we're out of here.
We're out of here. Right.
Yeah. And grandma was, again, Romanian. And my grandfather on my mother's side, his family was in Austria. And they were treated really badly.
Yes.
So they hit the road early and they got out. But, you know, it's hard to tell my mom not to watch this. And, you know, you're joking aside, but, you know, it's hard to tell someone that. But it's heartbreaking for these survivors and Jewish people my mother's age. It's just really very difficult because she knew that my father's family didn't make it. And that's why I have no cousins. Both of my parents were only children. And you know, the people that we think that we were related to that we found later on, that were hidden were no longer Jewish. They were hidden underground by Christian families. And so when we met them, they had already become, their new identities had happened. So this is really hard to see. However, since Donald Trump has become president, the anti-Semitism has grown in this country tremendously.
Right. Right.
And so, what, you know, living down south, when you see that Confederate flag go up, you know that Confederate flag is closely related to people, not only white supremacists, but people that are that follow along with Hitler and are anti-Semitic. So that whole feeling in the past 4 years of being an American Jew has been really hard on Jewish people. And so let's fast forward to last Wednesday. Here's the Capitol, and you have one man wearing Camp Auschwitz, making a total joke of all the Jewish people in America. And another one is wearing a t-shirt that said, you know, 6 million Jews wasn't enough. You know, that, and they were standing together. So obviously they knew each other and coordinated
that.
And so, you know, let's go back to what you said before. The president has a daughter who converted to Judaism because her husband wouldn't marry her unless he did. Unless she did. And the reason why you convert to Judaism is so when your children are born, they're born Jewish, because the mother is the person that dictates whether you're Jewish or not. Because they know who the mother is, right? In the old days, they didn't have DNA and all that. But they knew who the mother was. The father, we don't know so much. But the mother, they knew.
We're taking her word for it.
So she did convert to Judaism, and so her children could be born Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
With that said, there has been an utterly disrespect for Jewish people that comes from Donald Trump, and also from Ivanka and Jared. They are not.
Yeah, they blow my mind on this.
How is this
okay with them?
And he was raised in a somewhat conservative to Orthodox Jewish community. So, you know, you would think that he would be, you know, question what his father-in-law is saying and spewing, but he didn't. And, you know, you say Donald Trump hasn't said anything about this. He hasn't in 4 years. He's certainly not going to say anything now. But, you know, he doesn't care. I mean, when he gets up there and calls people, you know, very fine people on both sides in Charlottesville, when they were like, say, the Jews will not overtake us. I mean, that's just for a Jewish person, and, you know, for young Jewish people to hear this, because they heard stories. You always hear stories. You celebrate the Holocaust in memory.
Right.
But they didn't have that personal attack on them. Right. But now they do.
Right.
They feel it. My kids feel it. And it's lots of conversations around the dinner table, Gene, because it's uncomfortable. And, you know, to a level of where we see the racism and the anti-Semitic crown just covering us again. They go hand in hand, and we've been to, you know, you go through history in this country, and it's a hand in hand movement. So, yeah, I mean, it's really disturbing and horrible. And it even makes you want to fight more to make sure this man never, ever becomes any kind of political, position, holds any political position again.
And these Republicans wrap themselves in the American flag and say that they are the strongest supporters of Israel, ever, right. And that the Democrats are not. These are gymnastic moves that I just cannot understand how anyone can convince themselves of such a position. I mean, it's completely illogical.
And traditionally Jewish people are Democrats. Jewish people are liberal. Jewish people, that's their standing. I mean, I'm not going to say, I'm not going to like paint that brush and say all Jewish people are Democrats. But in most cases, I mean, if you think about the folks that you know that are Jewish, they're pretty liberal minded and, accepting of others. That's something that you learn.
They accept that the government is a place where people come together to do big things and to do good. We're up to, as we're watching the second impeachment of the president, we are seeing that we are at the moment up to 9 Republicans are voting for this. And what was the number that I said we need to get to?
Yeah, 218.
We're at 205.
We're 206. Right?
So maybe maybe we'll be there by the end of the show.
I don't know.
We'll get there.
I just want to follow up. I think that there are a couple of things that are really important about this. When Republicans get behind Donald Trump, they're also getting behind his racism and his anti-Semitic ways. Right. So they're not just supporting image of make America great again. They're supporting the Make America Great for white men, for that power.
It's really Everybody Make America else, White Again.
Yeah. It's white and I don't want to pick on all Christians, but that's what it is. I mean, because that right wing, very religious group, they just, they're afraid of their power. They're afraid that they're becoming the minority.
It is power based on whiteness.
Yes.
And they have a lot that is going to be revealed to them with the inauguration of America's first African-American woman. And that one of the things that they're going to find out that you and I already know is that they're going to wake up the next morning and they're still going to be free. And it's going to have not the kind of impact on them that they're fearful of. Their fear is going to be overtaken by the goodness of what America can and should be. And so Penny, we're as we close out, I'm really looking forward to next Wednesday. And in many respects, I can't wait until it's over so that I know that everybody's safe and in one piece and that we can move on to getting our vaccines. I'm really glad that every member of the Congress was at least vaccinated with their first dose, because those that have become infected with COVID are going to experience a milder course of disease because of that, because they've had some vaccine. And there are a handful of members already who have been diagnosed with that they're positive for COVID. So I'm grateful that they probably won't die from that.
That's amazing, isn't it? I mean, And stay tuned. I know people in Orange County are asking a lot of questions about where and when. And like at the beginning of COVID, when I first got involved with it back in January, things change from day to day. So, right now we're in the 75 and older, but if Biden comes in next week and they push more vaccines out there, more doses out there, which I think they will, that's going to change quickly. So everybody needs to revisit where they're going, whether you're going to Orange County, UNC, Duke, all these different portals. You need to make sure you sign up on every single portal. And as soon as you get your appointment, then you can cancel the other ones, but make sure you get that appointment. I have a feeling they're going to open it up to 65 and above pretty soon.
Well, that's the CDC's recommendation now.
Yeah.
I don't know when the county will go along
when
with
they get the doses. That's it. Yeah. When they get the doses, we don't want the doses to sit there. We want to get them in people's arms.
So that's right.
Let's pay attention. And Jean, thank you for letting me talk a little bit about Judaism and anti-Semitic behavior of this past 4 years. It's really been hurtful. And I think that, the more we talk about it, we can heal. And you allowed me to do that. So I'm really thankful for that. We now have 10 Republicans that voted to impeach.
And Donald Trump is impeached for the second time. The vote is 224.
224, yeah.
Wow. And we'll climb from there with 10 Republicans on board. Good for them. One of them is Liz Cheney, who is in Republican leadership, and that's important. And we will go on from here. 225 it is now. So we will go forward, and I look forward to talking to you here and there, as we talked about. You're our official impeachment correspondent and celebrity chef, and we're always happy to talk to you. And we're way over time, so.
As usual,
America is safe for democracy because we can keep talking. Thank you so much, Penny Rich. We're gonna sign off for now. Everybody, go and have a safe and happy weekend.
Follow Jean on Twitter at Jean Bolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.